Thank you, Heather, for the opportunity to talk to you. I don't know if you've noticed, but one of the strange things about the Sermon on the Mount is the number of times when Jesus was actually reminding the Jews of things that they already knew. And here is another example. The Jewish leaders had always insisted on the paramount obligation of telling the truth. The world stands fast on three things, they used to say, on justice, on truth, and on peace. And four persons are shut out from the presence of God: the scoffer, the hypocrite, the liar, and the retailer or reteller of slander. And the person who has given his word and breaks it is as bad as an idolater. So that was pretty powerful stuff. And when Heather first asked me to talk to you about swearing, it didn't quite click as to what she meant. But having read those words from Matthew, it all came to mean something. So before we get any more confused, and this sermon's a bit of a rag bag about swearing, I warn you. But before we go any further, let's just have a look about swearing. I mean, in the biblical sense, not how we tend to use it. Just to make it clear, I'm not thinking about the way that certain words are used as adjectives or punctuation in everyday speech. A year or two, let me just reminisce a bit. A year or two before I began my training for the ministry, I had to attend what was then called a CACTUM selection conference. And CACTUM stands for the Central Advisory Council for Training for the Ministry. What happened was you stayed in a diocesan house, about 15, 20 of you, with five examiners, and one by one you appeared before each of the examiners and had an interview. Some interviews more rigorous than others, but on the whole it was quite an enjoyable experience. They decided, however, that I was too innocent and needed some rough edges knocking off. So I was sent to work for Morris Motors in Oxford, where I spent a very happy year helping to build Austin 1100s and considerably expanding my then limited knowledge of the English language. I won't, for decency's sake, give you examples of what I learnt, but let me just say that that is not the sort of swearing that Jesus is talking about. Very often, we swear unconsciously. Goodbye means, may God be with you. Struth means, by God's truth. Gor blimey, as immortalized in the My Fair Lady song, my old man's a dustman, he wears the dustman's hat, he wears gor blimey trousers, and he lives in the council flat. I'm not going to sing it. That means, gor blimey, means may God blind me if I'm not telling the truth or if I'm telling a lie. Crikey means by Christ, gosh means by God. And the two rather more ancient ones, which sound funny to a modern ear, Gadzooks, which is actually by God's hooks, which is a reference to not to fishing, but to the nails which held Jesus on the cross. And Egad, which again is another word for by God. When I was teaching in school, very often children who were accused of some misdemeanor would say, I swear by my mother's life, I didn't do it. And by the way, when they said that, one knew pretty well that they had. Far too often, people use sacred language in the most meaningless way, and those are examples of that. They take the sacred name on their lips as the most thoughtless, in the most thoughtless and irreverent way. The sacred name should be kept for sacred things. According to the Jews, an oath which contained the name of God was absolutely binding, no doubt about it. The result was that if a man swore by the name of God in any form, he would keep that promise, keep that vow. If he swore by heaven or by earth or by Jerusalem or by his head or even by his mother's life, he felt quite free to break that oath. The result was that the evasion of a binding oath had been brought to a fine art. The idea was that if God was brought into the words of the transaction, then he would be a partner in the transaction. If his name was not, then he would have nothing to do with the transaction at all. And here is, I think, a great eternal truth, which if you don't remember anything else I say, I want you to try to remember this. Life cannot be divided into compartments, in some of which God is involved, and in others which he is not involved. There can't be one kind of behavior, one kind of language in the church, in the Christian community, or another kind of behavior, another kind of language in, I don't know, the factory, the office, or even, dare I say it, Morris Motors. There cannot be one standard of conduct in the church and another standard of conduct in the world. That is wrong. This passage concludes with the commandment that when a man has to say yes, he should say yes, and when he has to say no, he should say no and nothing more. One version of the verses says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. No prevarication. So does this saying of Jesus then forbid us to take an oath anywhere? How about, for instance, in the witness box, if we're called to give evidence at a trial? There were, and still are, the Quakers. I'm mentioning the Quakers because they will not in any situation agree to take an oath. They're quite happy to make an affirmation, but they won't take an oath. The utmost length to which George Fox, the founder of the Quakers, would go was to say, was to use the word verily or truly. He writes, I never wronged man or woman in all that time I worked in business. When I was in that service, I used in all my dealings the word truly. And it was quite a common saying at the time, if George Fox says truly, that's all right. There's no altering him. That's good enough. It's worth, actually, if you've got 5 spare minutes this afternoon, Googling George Fox. He was a very interesting man and lived a very interesting life. And I think a lot of people don't know really anything about him, but it's worth having a look. I do commend it. Just to finish with, let's look at the last part, the end of the verse. The Revised Standard Version says that if a man must answer simply yes or no, anything more than this comes from the evil one. Now, what on earth does that mean? What Jesus is saying, actually, is this. The truly good person will never need to take an oath. The truth of his sayings, the reality of his promises, need no such guarantee. But the fact that oaths are still sometimes necessary is the proof that all men are not good men, and this is not a good world. So Jesus is leaving us with 2 obligations, 2 duties. First of all, to make our lives and our personalities and our behavior such that men will so see our transparent goodness that they will never ask us to swear an oath. And also it puts on us the obligation to seek to make this world such a world that falsehood and infidelity will be so eliminated that the necessity for oaths will be abolished. What a huge task that is. But believe me, if you ask for God's help, it will be possible. Amen.
Thank you so much.